my chat with Coach Ernie Lopez. He started coaching at the age of 18 at his alma mater, Manzano High School. And now he's currently the head coach at Washington High School in Glendale, Arizona. He has involvement with the USA basketball organization as well as Snow Valley basketball camps. I'm super excited to talk with him about the importance of skill development and also what it's like to coach boys basketball players. Let's roll it back and see how the conversation went.
I always start with this question. How did you get into coaching?
Yeah, I think it's a, I think I have a pretty cool story, but, I grew up in, I was born and raised in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I played at Manzano High School, and I graduated in 2009. And I was really fortunate because at Manzano High School, I was able to play on some really good teams and play in a really good program. Travis Julian was the head coach at Manzano when I was there, and very, very good coach, really well respected coach in New Mexico. But I was a very average player. There's times because we were such a good team, there's times I played a lot, there's times I didn't play at all, right? And so, but my head coach, Travis Julian, always preached in his program, if you're not playing, how are you helping? How are you helping us win if you're not playing? And so I kind of took that to heart. And so I kind of wanted to figure out a way, how can I help, my teammates, and how can I help my team win when I'm not playing? And I'm such a competitive, just like a lot of coaches are, right? I'm such a competitive animal, and I'm such a competitive beast that I wanted to win it no matter what. So practice, games, anything, I want to win at. I have a hard time playing board games sometimes or video games because if I lose, it's a bad day. But, so I wanted to try to find a way to help win. So what I started doing is just I started paying extra attention to film, extra attention to scouting reports and game plans and all that. And I started trying to learn the game. And I was very fortunate because I played for a really good coach. So in that process, I kind of figured out, hey, maybe I might want to coach. And I really enjoyed watching film, and I really enjoyed the scouting report part of it. I really enjoyed the preparation part of it. So I started thinking, maybe I would want to coach. And then, one of my best friends, he was a senior when I was a freshman, he graduated and became a coach. His name is Andrew Donnell. So he graduated from our program, and like the very next year, he was the freshman head coach. And I thought that was really cool. And so, as the season was going on, our coaching staff would always meet with us as seniors halfway through the season. And they say, hey, you're getting ready to graduate. What are some of your goals? How can we help you? Stuff like that. And I told him, I said, hey, I think I might want to coach. I know Drew kind of moved on to coaching after he was done playing. I think I might really want to do that. And I said, would I be able to kind of stay and help out? He said, yeah, we could find something for you. And so for that moment on, I started paying a little bit more, already more attention than I already was in film and preparation and all that stuff. And I kind of figured out as a player, every drill that we ran or, stuff that we did in practice, I knew how to do it. And I knew how to teach others how to do it. And I knew how to do it in a way that would make my coach happy. So we had two freshmen on our varsity team, and I kind of would help them with the drill. Like, hey, this is how you do it. This is what you need to say. This is what you need to do in the drill to make coach happy, and stuff like that. And there was one game in particular, one of my best friends, his name is Ryan. He was one of the best players on our team, and we called a set for him, and the set was called curl. And Ryan messed up the set, and I can't remember the set exactly, but he didn't screen the right body. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. And I popped up out of my chair, and I coached him. I said, Ryan, we're running curl. You're supposed to yada, yada, yada. And my coach looked back at me, and I thought I messed up. I thought I did something I wasn't supposed to do, right? And my coach, when he wants to be, my coach can be a very intimidating person. And so, but he stuck his hand out and he like dapped me up and he said, hey, thank you, good job. And so from that moment on, I was like, man, I think I could kind of do this coaching thing. I think I want to do this coaching thing. And so when I graduated, same thing, I came to him again. And I said, I want to coach. I want to be a part of the staff and stay around. And so I became the freshman head coach right away. When I graduated, I was 18 years old, did that for a couple years. And I was a JV coach for a year. Then I was a varsity assistant. I coached at my alma mater at Manzano for 5 years. And then I moved on to Highland High School, where I was a varsity assistant for 2 years. And I got to work with one of the best coaches in the state. His name is Danny Brown. His dad was also an assistant on our staff. His dad is the godfather of New Mexico basketball. He won 6 state titles in a row at one point. He made it to 12 title games. So I got to work with those guys. And then finally, at the age of 24, I took a head coaching job in Socorro, New Mexico, which is about an hour south of Albuquerque, to be the head coach at Socorro High School.
That's great. I love that you were essentially a player coach on your team, just such a great leader. And that is how you decided to get into coaching, because you did it right then and there as a player. That's awesome.
Well, what's funny too is I like you know, if you ask some of my teammates back then, they might just say I was another dude, right? But I just wanted to help. Like, that was my thing. I just wanted to help win. And if I wasn't playing, I just wanted to be a part of it somehow, right? And I think a lot of players, when they're not playing, they think I'm not helping, I'm not contributing, but there's a million ways you can help. It's in the film room, it's in practice, there's a bunch of different things, right? So yeah, I just, like I said, I'm so competitive. I just wanted to win, and I just wanted to be a part of the winning process.
Right. So for girls basketball, you know, there's a huge difference between JV and varsity and even Froshsoff and varsity. Just it's night and day, the talent. But for boys basketball, tell me a little bit about the levels there.
Yeah, so, you know, I have some experience, you know, coaching younger levels. I coached freshmen, like I said, JV for a year. I've coached kids that are in fifth grade, sixth grade, eighth grade. I've coached a bunch of different stuff with our youth program. And so coaching at the freshman level, you know, your main responsibility is to introduce kids to your program. You know, how do we do things here, your core values, your culture. And also your responsibility is to develop the young talent into hopefully one day being varsity basketball players. And it's not about winning and losing. Coaching freshman basketball is the most important job in any program. And the reason why is because you are introducing those kids to your program and how you do things. And it's not about winning and losing. A lot of coaches, I'm one of them. I was this guy. A lot of coaches get caught up in winning and losing at the younger levels. And to be honest, nobody cares, right? But people care about if varsity wins. That's really it. So my job and, you know, the approach I took to coaching freshman basketball was I need to develop my talent. I need to teach them how our program works. And I need to make sure that I identify maybe four or five kids that could one day play varsity. And one of those kids might be able to play varsity the next year, right, as a sophomore. Maybe he's ready. But my job is to kind of identify kids that can maybe one day play varsity and make sure every single one of those kids got better throughout the year. You know, hey, Johnny started at this point. Now he's at this point. He's a better basketball player because he played in our program. So it's the most important job in any program, in my opinion, is freshman basketball, the head freshman basketball coach. JV basketball is the hardest job in any program, and it's a thankless job, and it's a very, very difficult position to be in because as a JV coach, you might get a varsity player who's in trouble or maybe not playing well, so he's going to play JV, right? And you might get a younger kid that's on the freshman team. Maybe he's playing really well, so you pull him up to JV, right? So your team is always in flux. Your team is never practicing together. Your team is always kind of, you know, putting together some parts to kind of go play a basketball game. And my thing with JV basketball, if you're a JV basketball coach or you're a head coach, you know, my job of my JV coach is to identify four or five dudes that can play varsity next year. Like they're ready to go right now. And when our season ends, we're going to pull those guys up to varsity and they're going to be ready to go. Right. That's the biggest thing. And also as a JV coach, making sure that those guys are to make the transition to varsity, that they're ready. Terminology. Are you using the same terminology as your head coach? Because if they get to me and don't know my terminology, that's a problem. Right? Are they learning the same drills that we run? Are they learning the same schemes and the concept that we want to do offensively and defensively? You know, to me, that's a big job of a JV coach. And so these younger levels, they're so important to your program, and they're jobs that are so hard and they don't pay very well, right? And they're thankless jobs. And you know, I when I was a JV coach that year that I did it, I had four guys that were floating between varsity and JV. So they would practice with varsity and then play with me on JV. So it was really hard to get them to run a set. It was really hard to get them to do a game plan that we were doing. But it's something as a JV coach, you better be good at, or it's just, you're hindering your program if you're not good at those things.
So what's the chemistry of your JV team like if you have guys that are on varsity that just come down and occasionally play for junior varsity and potentially, you know, take the starting spots of these guys that have been practicing every day on junior varsity? That's got to be somewhat upsetting or, you know, demoralizing for these guys that have been working hard on JV. So tell me about that.
This is the hardest part of being a JV coach. And the hardest part of being a JV coach is how do you get guys to play together when there's going to be natural animosity and natural jealousy towards each other, right? Like, hey, I'm here every day and I practice every day, and then he gets to come down and play, right? And also you might have a kid that, hey, I'm a varsity guy. JV is going to be easy for me, and they might not play as hard, or they might not have the same effort that you need. And the approach that I took when I was a JV coach was, look, we are all in the same program, and we want our program to be successful. and I made it clear to our guys that were coming, maybe coming down to play JV, the expectations are the same as if you were playing with in a varsity practice. You're going to play hard, you're going to be a great teammate, and you're going to be coachable. And guys that were with me every day in practice, hey, it's your job to kind of maybe help these guys out. Maybe there's a set we're running, they need help with it. Or maybe there's a scheme that we're running, they're going to need help with it. And at the end of the day, it wasn't about winning and losing, because it's never about winning and losing on those younger levels. It's about getting better. But it's really hard to coach chemistry. It's really hard to coach culture when that kind of stuff's happening, right? And so the biggest thing that I took away from coaching JV is you better be able to communicate with guys effectively, and you better get guys to buy in, because if it's not, it could be a disaster. And I've seen programs that their JVs are a disaster because of that kind of stuff going on. And I was really fortunate to work for a program where we had a great culture, a great a great relationship with our kids, to where we were kind of able to do that. But that's natural. It's natural for a kid to have animosity. It's natural for a kid to be jealous of another kid, right? And at the end of the day, I've said this already, I'm a competitor. So, hey man, if you're better than that kid, we'll compete in practice, compete when we do things right. And you'll be able to earn trust when you're able to do those things.
Then maybe you're the kid who's on varsity, who's popping down to come play with JV. So as coaches, you know, we wear lots of hats. We don't all wear the same hats, but nonetheless, we all wear lots of hats. We're not just coaching practices and games. That's definitely not just what we do. Tell me about the different hats that you wear as a high school head coach.
Yeah, you know, I've heard this phrase a lot, and it's 100% true, especially, you know, in your position as a junior college coach. You know, in the hats I wear, you know, coach, you know, academic advisor, counselor, role model, leader, you know, all these different things that we can think of, friend sometimes, right? Sometimes your players might need someone to talk to. So, but I think the biggest hat that I wear and the most important that I wear is a teacher. And it's our job to teach this game. And, you know, Coach Showalter, who I've worked with Stowe Valley and stuff, you know, the game is overcoached and undertaught. Right. And this is not a basketball thing, but to me, this is a life thing. And, you know, I'm a teacher at my school. I teach econ and government at the school that I'm at. So to me, the most important job I have is teacher, and teaching kids skills that equip them for outside of basketball, teaching kids skills that equip them for their future, you know, job or whatever it is that they're doing. So to me, our biggest job as basketball coaches is to provide any type of teaching and mentoring that we can to our players to get them prepared for life, right? And as much as I would want all my kids to play at the next level, it's not realistic. And the biggest goal of our program is to teach our kids, to teach our young men how to be great future husbands, how to be great future fathers, and how to be great future contributors to society, right? And that it's our job to teach them those things. And I've been very fortunate to have experiences where I could say, hey, I'm teaching you this because I messed up in this area, or I'm teaching this because I've succeeded in this area. So out of all the hats that we wear, and we wear a lot of hats, Coach, and I'm sure you know, coaching is like the last thing we do sometimes, right? We do all this stuff throughout the day, and then we get to like coach practice for like an hour or whatever it is, right? But the biggest hat we wear, in my opinion, is a teacher.
Absolutely. You know, I'm going to do everything in my power. I'm going to tweet about my players. I'm going to text coaches. I'm going to do everything that I can to get them a scholarship to the four-year level, right? Because that's just what I know that they're playing basketball to do, to accomplish. They want, if they're coming to OCC, they have goals and aspirations to play at the four-year level. But at the same time, I don't know that many junior colleges that every single player, or for high schools, every single player on varsity gets a four-year scholarship. We try, but I just don't know if that happens. And at that point, there's got to be something else that we are giving these kids besides a scholarship. What else did they get out of our program besides a scholarship? Because they don't all get scholarships. So it's got to be more. What else do we teach them beyond basketball? So I totally 100% completely agree, and we stress that in our program as well.
Well, and then to me, the other, you know, the biggest thing is I want a kid 10 years from now, after playing in my program, I want a kid to come back and say, or think and say, hey man, I learned this from Coach Lopez. I learned this from our coaches in our program, right? I learned how to be on time. I learned how to be accountable. I learned how to be tough, right? And we have this phrase in our program all the time. We say this phrase all the time. It's not a basketball thing. It's a life thing. Being on time is not a basketball thing. It's a life thing. Being tough is a life thing, right? And being accountable is a life thing. And through basketball, we're going to, you know, obviously this is cliche to say, but through basketball, we're going to teach our kids those things. Because if they do go on to play at the next level, if they do go and play on to NBA or what college, whatever goal they reach or whatever level they reach, you have to have those things. And then when they retire or when they stop playing basketball, you have to have those things in order to be a successful human being. And you know, that's our biggest goal of our program, especially in our area. We live in a, you know, my school's in an area that's very diverse. We have some poverty in our area, and we're trying to get kids to help better our community by bettering, you know, our young men's lives in our community.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned time and even how it's kind of a cliche, because every coach says it, right? We're teaching our kids to be on time, and every player knows that, but time is so important, right? I mean, if you are late to practice, if you are late to your job, if you're late to show up to see a friend or to meet a colleague for lunch, you're going to potentially put yourself in position to lose your spot on the team, lose your spot at that company, piss off your friend and damage that relationship, piss off your colleague, whatever the case may be. And then not to mention just the effort and what you put into that time, as far as the time that you put in when you practice, and are you really all there? Are you paying attention? That time you put in with your friend, are you paying attention to that conversation? Just time is, it's so much more than, yeah, we're teaching them to show up on time, right? The importance of time is so much more than just showing up on time. It's what you put into that time spent.
And to kind of piggyback off that, what we tell our kids is it's disrespectful if you're late, right? It's disrespectful. Think about that. Like, we're all here on time and we're going to wait for you because you can't figure out a way to be here, right? It's disrespectful to your coaches. It's disrespectful to your, like you said, your friends if you're late. And I can't stand people that are late. It's such a big thing in our program. And maybe I'm emphasizing it more than anybody else. But I just think it's really disrespectful to colleagues, relationships, whatever it is, if you don't value their time. Because time is the only thing in this world that we cannot get back, right? I don't know if anyone's made a time machine yet. If you have, hit me up. I'd love to check out. But we cannot get back any time. And the time that we put into our players is valuable. The time that they put into us is valuable. And I get really upset when that is disrespected, or that time barrier that we have in our culture is disrespected, right? And here's the thing. I've been fired before because I couldn't be on time. Like, when I was like 17, I lost the job because, like, hey, man, you're late all the time. And I was like, oh, this is kind of a big deal. Maybe my coach was right.
Maybe they were actually teaching me something after all.
Yeah, I know.
All right. So I know that you've been a part of USA Basketball, and you are a part of USA Basketball. You're a part of Snow Valley Basketball, huge organizations. Tell me, what do you enjoy most about being a part of those organizations?
Yeah, for sure, man. You know, I play a very microscopic level in both of those things. You know, I've worked Snow Valley basketball camps now for 4 years. I've volunteered to work USA basketball camps now for the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, me and USA basketball, we're trying to get a program going called the Open Court Program here in Arizona. Oh, the Open Court Program is a nationwide thing, and we're trying to get it here in Arizona. And we were on track to get that here, started here in Phoenix, but, you know, with all this coronavirus stuff, that's kind of put a halt to a lot of that stuff. So, but the biggest thing I take away from the very small parts that I've played and working for those things and volunteering for those things is what an amazing learning experience it is. For anybody that's listening that doesn't know what Snow Valley basketball is, I would encourage you to Google it, and you'll see that it's the best basketball camp in the nation, and it's in the middle of nowhere in Iowa. And I know what you're thinking, like, no way is the best basketball camp in the nation, and maybe the world, is in Iowa. It's in Texas. It's in New York. It's in California. It's in Iowa, man. And I can't explain it, but it is. It's at a Division III school called Wartburg College, and they get kids from all over the country and coaches from all over the world, NBA coaches and all that stuff, to come participate in that camp. And it's such a humbling and a learning experience. I've learned so much just from working from those guys, and I've learned so much from just being around those guys. You know, one of my best friends at that camp, his name is Big Al. He's a 7-foot guy from Slovenia, and he works at camp every year. I've met coaches from Mexico. I've met coaches from Russia. I've met coaches, a guy that works with the Golden State Warriors. I met a guy that's worked with the Chicago Bulls. And all these guys come to the middle of nowhere in Iowa and work this camp. And it's such a humbling learning experience. And then with USA Basketball, you know, I've been fortunate to volunteer and work some camps for USA Basketball. I've been fortunate to, you know, try to get a program started with USA Basketball here in Arizona. We're still trying to get it off the ground with all this stuff. Jeff Van Gundy, who coached with USA Basketball, he coached one of their qualifying teams. he said in a podcast once, coaching USA basketball is the biggest success that he's ever had in the coaching profession. And he's had a lot of success in our profession. And putting on a USA basketball t-shirt and working a camp, or putting on a USA basketball polo and working a camp, is the most humbling thing that I've ever experienced. And it's the most gratifying thing I've ever experienced. And when I first put on that t-shirt and volunteered to work a camp, I was so awed by that experience. And I was so awed that I was wearing that t-shirt and working with and volunteering for USA basketball. We are the greatest country in the world. And just working with kids through USA basketball was so humbling and an amazing learning experience. Coach Showalter, who is in charge of youth development for USA basketball, I worked with him at Snow Valley, and I worked with him with USA basketball. It's just amazing learning experience. And for anybody that wants to volunteer to do those things, it's not hard. You just got to email the right people. You just got to reach out to the right people, and you're able to kind of slide in and volunteer and kind of experience that stuff.
Great. So then maybe before working with those organizations, you were like this, but maybe even more so now, do you put a lot of emphasis on player development and skill work in your high school practices?
Yeah. So after working with Snow Valley, there's a lot of coaches at Snow Valley that because it's a teaching camp. That's what Snow Valley is. It's a skills teaching camp. And there's a lot of coaches at Snow Valley that teach the game at such a minute detail level that makes such a huge difference in your player development. And after going to Snow Valley, there's a coach at Snow Valley, his name is Joel Lincoln, who works a lot with the perimeter players, and Big Al works a lot with the post players. Those guys are so good at teaching the game and so good at teaching that skill or whatever skill that they're working on that you'd be dumb not to implement it in your program, right? And so what I learned from those guys at Snow Valley, and what I learned from those guys, you know, teaching skill development, is skill development is an ever growing process, and it can never be stopped. And I think a lot of coaches, they make this mistake. I know I did. Preseason's all about skill development. You know, we're going to get better. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And then the season starts, and then it's all about like executing a set and executing a scheme and all that. And all that stuff's important. Of course it is. But in my program, every day, we start off every day with some type of skill development. It's footwork, it's ball handling, it's passing, it's shooting, it's defense, it's, you know, footwork, whatever it is, we start every day with that, because the skill development process never ends. And I think we do our kids a disservice is that of when we get into the season, we like stop the skill development part. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. And in order for your kids to execute your scheme or to execute your set or whatever you want them to do, they better have the skills to do it. And you know, my experience with that is that, you know, my second year as the head coach at Socorro, you know, we had a big team. Well, big for New Mexico. We had some 6'6 kids and a couple 6'5 kids, and we wanted to run some high-low action, but they didn't have the skill to do it. So we had to teach our kids how to post. We had to teach our kids how to seal, how to spin seal, how to go right hook, left hook, drop step, up and under, spin. We had to teach our kids all of that stuff. And I learned how to do that from Big Al at Snow Valley. And you know, one of my biggest success stories with that was, you know, a kid named Tyler Greenwood, who was a 6'6 kid. He was first team all district. He was honorable mention all state that year. And here's the last thing with skill development. You could be the best coach in the world. You could be the best teacher in the world. If your kid is not willing to put in the work to get better, it doesn't matter, right? So it takes two to tango with that. And Tyler and some other kids I've been able to had the opportunity to work with, they're such hard workers with that. And that's my biggest thing I've learned from skill development. Is it takes two to tango. Your kid has to want to get better, and then you have to want to get your kid better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know a lot of boys, and I know a lot of men that play basketball. So I know I'm not wrong when I say that there's a good amount of them that think that they are so much better than they actually are. So how do you handle a player like that?
It's funny. I want every player in my program to have a tremendous amount of confidence, and I want every player in my program to have a tremendous amount of belief in themselves, right? And I want every player in my program to be extremely competitive. Now, what we tell our kids in our program is, look, we want you to be the best basketball player that you want to be, and we want to help you get to that level. The biggest thing, though, is that you have to have realistic goals and realistic expectations of yourself. You know, you might have a player in your program that says, well, I'm an average 30 this year. That's not a realistic goal for you, man. I think maybe you playing 8 to 10 minutes is a realistic goal for you, right? And that should be something that you strive for. But, you know, the way I've always kind of attacked this situation or approached this situation is, we want every player to be the best player in their role. So, you know, it's the coach's job to give you a role. It's the coach's job to assign you a role, right? It's your job to expand your role if that's what you want to expand or if that's what you want to do. So, hey, if I say your role is to rebound, you should be the best rebounder in the state. You should be the best rebounder on our team. And what we really try to preach to our kids is you are as good as you want to be, right? And you're going to thrive in your role. But have realistic expectations about what it is that you can do and what it is that you can't do. And you know, when I was at Socorro, we're going to implement this here too at Washington. When I was at Socorro, we had something called the Wall of Truth. And the Wall of Truth never lies because it's incapable of lying. And I stole this idea from Coach Weir at the University of New Mexico. And the Wall of Truth, we had every stat that you can imagine charted on that wall: blocks, charges, loose balls, deflection, steals, assists, every stat that you could think of, we had it charted on that wall. And what we started doing was, you know, when kids were saying, hey, coach, I should be playing more. I'm good enough. I should be playing more. Well, okay, let's go look at the Wall of Truth. Because when you play, your plus minus is like -8, right? You lead our team in turnovers in the minutes that you play. Or, when you're on defense, you miss rotations. We had that charted on there as well. And so then a player might kind of realize, oh, I'm not playing because coach doesn't like me. I'm not playing because I'm better, or, you know, coach doesn't think I'm as good as I think I am. This is hard data that's showing me that I need to get better, right? But what I told that player is, I said, hey, when you play, you rebound, right? When you play and you're 10 to 12 minutes, whatever you're playing, you're averaging pretty high in our team on rebounds. So if you want to keep playing and you want to try to expand your role, keep doing that. That's going to help you get in the game more. That's going to help me earn trust with you or build trust with you, right? And so it's also a great tool for when you have meetings with parents. Well, first of all, in my program, we don't talk about playing time with parents. I'll talk about that with the player. But, you know, the player can go back and show mom and dad, hey, I want to play more, but look, the Wall of Truth doesn't lie. You know what I mean? And so it's something that we've implemented in our program here. And, you know, what we started doing, we started saying, okay, who are my 5 starters? Who are the guys that we start? And it's no coincidence that on the Wall of Truth, they're kind of leading us in those categories. You know, I had a player 1 year who was a starter and he played a ton of minutes, but he led our team in turnovers. And I said, look, man, you're going to start seeing your playing time shrink if you keep leading our team in turnovers. And so he looked at the Wall of Truth and said, okay, this is something I need to work on. This is something I need to do. Cause when I told him that, he didn't believe me. He's like, I don't lead our team in turnovers. I'm like, look, right. And so, it's something that we've implemented in our program, but I want every kid to have a tremendous belief in themselves, but a realistic belief in their self. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So then with that, what are some of the biggest issues or struggles that you face coaching high schoolers?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue or the biggest struggle I've faced just in my experience is you come across a lot of adversity that has nothing to do with basketball, right? You know, at my school, sometimes we have kids sometimes that can't find a ride. Like, that's annoying. Like, come on, man, like, you could find a ride, but it's out of their control, right? Mm-hmm. But the biggest adversity that I've faced as being a high school coach is having to do 800 things that have nothing to do with basketball. And that's frustrating. Fundraising sucks. I hate fundraising more than anything, right? Fundraising, grade checks. And I'm sure in your job, you experience some of the same things, but fundraising, grade checks, behavioral issues, if you're having that in your program, right? And those are the biggest challenges when all you want to do is coach basketball and there's 800 million things you have to do that have nothing to do with basketball. And you know what's funny, though? I've learned this. That's on every level. At your level, I'm sure you deal with that. On the NBA level, guys are dealing with that. Like, Mike D'Antoni is dealing with a guy that broke bubble protocol, maybe. Right? That has nothing to do with basketball, and he's having to deal with it, right? That's adversity. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, our jobs as basketball coaches aren't always just basketball. It involves a million different things, and that's going to be frustrating, but it's all worth it if you get to do that basketball time.
Right. So we talked about the many different hats that you wear, that most coaches wear, and you said that one of the biggest jobs or hats that you have as a basketball coach is to make sure that your guys become exceptional young men in society. With your team, are you discussing issues that are going on in the world today? Like, for example, Black Lives Matter. And what's your approach in doing so?
My goal is, when we are coming together, which we're going to be able to come together kind of shortly, hopefully shortly anyway. My goal is I want to discuss these things with them. A lot of my kids on my team are Black, and a lot of my kids on our campus are Black, and come, you know, we have a very diverse school. And I want to be able to discuss these things with them. And the biggest thing that I want to teach those kids, and it's something that I've learned as I've gotten older, is I want to be able to teach them how to discuss something openly with somebody, but be also be willing and be receptive to someone else's point of view, right? And I think in our society right now, we have a major issue where we have a lot of people that say a lot of things, but they won't listen to anything, right? And as long as the opposing view is not racist, and as long as the opposing view is not something that is, you know, egregiously bad, you should listen to that person. And this is beyond what we're talking about with, you know, Black Lives Matter and all that and stuff. But I want to be able to talk to somebody, and I want to be able to teach my kids to talk to somebody, express your view, and then accept their point of view as well, right? You don't have to agree with it, but to accept their point of view. And this goes beyond, like I said, it's not a basketball thing, it's a life thing. It goes beyond when I'm coaching you, I want you to be able to accept what I'm telling you and what I'm asking you to do, just like you want me to be able to accept what you're telling me and what your point of view is, right? And like I said, I think we're having an issue right now in our society where people say a lot of things, but they won't listen to anybody. And there's no growth in that, right? There's no growth in that. And I want to be able to teach them how to openly talk about subjects that might be sensitive, that might be controversial, but being able to find or being able to accept someone else's point of view. And like I said, as long as someone else's point of view is not deep rooted in hatred or putting down a group of people or a race down, you should listen to that person. There's nothing wrong with listening to that person because there's growth in it. And it eliminates a lot of conflict that can come out of that, right? So I hope I can teach them that. When I was younger, that is not a skill that I had. And I'm working on that skill still. But I think it's important to be able to communicate with somebody openly and be able to accept their point of view.
Absolutely. And I think with that too, it's just so important that we are just empathetic and we provide trust for them to know that we do want to listen. We do want to hear them out. And with issues like Black Lives Matter, it's important to understand that perception can be reality. So again, I think it just comes down to being empathetic and compassionate and just letting them know, look, I hear you, I'm with you, I just want to listen to you because I can't relate because I'm not Black, but I can definitely be understanding and empathetic and compassionate and just support them.
Yeah, no question. And it's really, it goes beyond, you know, some of the social issues that we're experiencing in our country. It goes beyond all of that. You might have a kid that is going through something that you might not think is a big deal, but it's a huge deal to him, right? And this has nothing to do with Black Lives Matter, but, you know, you might have a kid that is going through something emotionally that you might tell him will be tougher and kind of get through it, but you got to be empathetic towards what he's going through, right? Or what she's going through. And kids go through so many weird emotions and weird feelings, right? I think sometimes as coaches, we kind of overlook what they're going through instead of helping them or guiding them what they're going through, right? And if it's something that they need to be challenged on, challenge them. If it's something that they just need to be listened to, then just listen. And this is something that I'm trying to get better as a head coach and as a person is just listen. Listen to somebody, right? This is why I feel this way. This is how I'm feeling this way. Can you help me? Right? Or will you guide me through this? And sometimes they don't want help at all. They just want someone to listen to them, right? Maybe they're going through something at home and they don't need anything from you. They just need you to listen. So it's something that I think as coaches, especially because we sometimes see our players more than their parents do, right? It's something as coaches that I hope that we continue to improve on, especially with high school kids, because they go through these weirds up and down, right? I'm sure we both remember being in high school going through weird stuff.
Oh, yeah. And just like you were saying, you know, I worked with coaches who, when they played, they worked harder than anybody else on their team. You know, they just never would quit. They would go puke in a trash can and be right back on the line or whatever the case may be. And they have these unrealistic expectations that if a kid breaks down and they just can't run any further or whatever the case may be, their knee hurts, that, well, I did it, so you can do it too. Like, they don't even, there's no empathy at all. Like, I get it. Sometimes I find myself thinking, well, hey, I did it, so why can't you? But But I have to go back and check myself and realize that, just like you said, I don't know what's going on with them at home. I don't have their knees. I don't know what their knee is feeling. You know, I do know that there's a difference between being hurt and injured. And I had teammates who couldn't do one of our hardest drills, but then they would come back as soon as we started playing 5-on-5. So I get that there's that perspective too. But I think that coaches, just like you said, need to find a way to understand that that kid is not you. Their journey through basketball is not what your journey was. So just find a way to find out, why are they always complaining about their knees, or why can't they push through running, instead of just expecting them to do it because you did.
Well, it's funny too. I think a lot of coaches have this, they have this back in my day mentality, right? And hey, it's not your day anymore. Your day passed, right? The kids are different. We're different. Society's different. Coaching is different, right? Than what it was back in your day, quote unquote, right? And so, yeah, I struggle with that too as a young coach. And I'm 29 years old, but when I was younger, you know, I struggled with that too. Like, well, you know, I would put in so much time, and you don't. It's just different. It's way different than what we think it is, right? And so we have some non-negotiables in our program. Like, you're gonna do this, or you can't be a part of it, or you're gonna do that. But you know, with that said, hey, you know, you're right. I don't have your knees. I can't feel your pain. I can't feel what you're going through, right? I'll challenge you. I'll try to hold you accountable through that. But I think we need to get out of this mindset of coaches of, this is how it was when I played, because as hard as it might be to grasp sometimes, like, I played 10 years ago. You know how much the game has changed in 10 years, right? And it's going to change again in 10 more years. So this back in my day mentality is something I think holds a lot of coaches back. It holds a lot of parents back. It holds a lot of people back in our profession, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. All right, so last question. What is the ultimate goal for you, and what are the necessary steps that you think you must take to get there?
Man, if you asked me this question when I was like 20, man, my answer would be way different. But I think when I first started coaching, I was like a lot of coaches, right? Like, I want to get to the college level. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to coach at this level, you know, blah, 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 blah. And what I've learned, especially with working with Snow Valley and working with USA Basketball a little bit on a volunteer basis, I've learned that I need to do a good job where I'm at. And when I was a younger coach, I was always, I'm going to do a good job today because I want to get this job, or I'm going to do a good job because I want to get that job, right? And what I've learned is that if you don't do a good job where you're at, none of those jobs are ever going to come to you anyway, right? So my ultimate goal is, on an everyday basis, do the best job I can for Washington High School. And I love my athletic director here. I love my community here. I love teaching here. So do I have desires maybe to do something else? Yeah, maybe. But my ultimate desire is to do the best job I can here, right? And so that might lead to other opportunities down the road, which is great. But, you know, the best advice I ever got from coach, like I said, is from Coach Showalter. You know, I asked him, how do I move up? How do I get more involved with USA Basketball? How do I get to the college level? And he says, hey, man, do a good job where you're at. Don't worry about that. Do a good job where you're at, and those opportunities are going to come. And what it comes down to is that it's not fair to the kids in your program. It's not fair to the members of your community. It's not fair to the members of your staff if you're always looking at the next thing, right? What's the next job? What's the best way for me to get the next job? Just do a good job where you're at. And I know that's hard to hear sometimes, and I have to keep reminding myself of that sometimes. But if you just do a good job where you're at, opportunities will come to you, and success will come to you if you kind of take care of those things, right? So I think another thing, though, and you've mentioned this on other podcasts with previous guests, is, you know, you talk about networking, and you talk about, you know, building relationships with people. And I think that's the best way to ever, if you want to continue to thrive in our profession, you have to create as many relationships as you can with people. Now, with that said, though, and you talked about this with a recent guest, there has to be like substance to that relationship, right? And I hear a lot of coaches say this all the time, and this phrase drives me crazy. You know, I have a lot of connections. Well, what does that even mean, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I had a coach tell me one time, like, well, you have a great connection. You should continue to use that connection. Well, I don't have a connection. I have a friendship. I have a relationship with that person, right? And I think when I was a younger coach, when I would introduce myself to coaches, and I would, you know, meet coaches, I had this attitude of like, hey, I want to be friends with you, or I want to be connected with you, quote unquote, so I can get a job and go give me a job, or I can get something down the road. And to me, that's so lame, right? It's just a lame concept, because what you're trying to do is use people, right? Mm-hmm. You're not trying to build a relationship to have a genuine relationship or a friendship with that person. You're just trying to use them. And I stole this from Kevin Eastman. I heard this on a podcast. It doesn't matter who you know. It matters who knows you, right? Like, I know who Doc Rivers is. He doesn't know who I am. I know who, you know, LeBron is, but he doesn't know who I am, right? And I think a lot of coaches get tied up in this, like, well, I shook hands with this guy one time, so I know him. No, you don't, right? Or, hey, I did this one time and I know him. Like, no, you don't. It matters who knows you. And so whenever I try to make a connection with a coach or you know, build a relationship with a coach, it's out of friendship, not what can I get from you or what can you give from, you know, what can you give me? Because at the end of the day, you're just using that person. That's not okay to me. To me, that's kind of lame, right? So I've been able to build a lot of connections with guys, but to me, and I hope anyway, that they're based off like, hey, I just want to be your friend and we can help each other, right? And we can get stuff from each other. And I know that might sound kind of, it might sound kind of cliche, but I hope coaches think about that when they're younger and they're trying to, you know, progress in our profession. Do it genuinely. Don't do it to get something from somebody. Like, you know, one time I was in a car with a head coach. I was driving him to a coaching clinic. I was helping out at the coaching clinic that we do here in Arizona. So I picked him up from the airport. I was driving to a coaching clinic and because he was a guest speaker. And he told me, he's like, yeah, we were talking about this subject. And he said, yeah, I met a guy once at a camp. And we followed each other on Twitter. And then he finds out that I get a head coaching job and he DMs me. He's like, hey, coach, wonder if you have any openings. Like, what? Like, not, hey, congrats on the job. You know, congrats for you. Hope things are going well. Like, hey, coach, do you have a job for me? And he's like, I don't know you, man. And so I hope these connections that we try to make with people are genuine and that we go about it from a way of, hey, I just want to build a relationship with you. And if that leads to an opportunity down the road, that's great. That's awesome. And I've had things like that work for me. And I'm sure you've had things like that work for you. But I hope coaches, especially younger coaches, don't meet people and want to shake hands with people because they want to take something from them.
Every single opportunity in coaching that I have had or that I applied for was because of an organic connection that I have, right? A real solid connection. Like a friend told me, hey, this job opened up, or a mentor said, hey, this opportunity presented itself and I'm going to recommend you. And so I stress it, just like you said, I stressed it in another interview, is when you make these connections, it has to be so beyond surface level. And don't get me wrong, there's going to be coaches that you meet and it'll never go beyond, hi, my name is Sammy Doucette. I coach at Orange Coast College. So nice to meet you. There's a good chance it might never go beyond that, but at least right. Be intentional and try to go beyond that, because you never know when you do that, these things, these jobs, these opportunities, it's just organic. As soon as someone, that connection you have, hears about a position or an opportunity, they're going to think, I'm going to tell Sammy, or I'm going to tell Ernie, because this sounds like right up their alley, because I know them. I've built a strong connection with them. It's like I said, it's beyond surface level. And we stress this with our players. You know, we say, go up to your professors, and it's not go introduce yourself to your professor and that's it. It's tell them you're an athlete, you know, talk to them constantly, communicate with them, because your professors are humans before they are professors. So the time is going to come where you might need them to give you an extra day to turn something in because, you know, you missed class. Or maybe at the junior college level, you don't just get excused for missing class. So maybe now it's we've now missed class because we've had 4 away games. Well, that professor, because you introduced yourself, because you went out of your way, you communicated with them constantly. They're a human first. They might be like, you know what? All right, yeah, I'll let it slide this time, you're excused. Whereas the football player in class, and I'm just using football as an example, who hasn't ever introduced himself, who doesn't communicate, who last minute the day before a final wants to know if there's any extra credit, the professor for him might be like, no, you're too late, sorry. That's why it's just so important to just be so intentional.
And to piggyback on what you said, every job I've ever gotten in this coaching world, this coaching profession, is because, like, the same thing as you, through a connection, through somebody that I knew, right? And I'm so guilty of this. I don't want anyone to think that I'm looking down. I'm guilty of this. When I was younger, I would, hey, I'm going to go meet this dude, so maybe he'll give me a job one day. And then what you learn is that, like, A, that doesn't work. And maybe it works for some other people, and that's great. But A, that doesn't work. And B, it's like a very, like, it's like an empty feeling, right? And I don't want anyone to, maybe one day I'll be in this position, but I don't want anyone to come up to me and try to take something from me, right? And say, hey, I want to meet Ernie just because he might give me a job one day. Like, that's lame, right? I don't want that. I want to be your friend, and I want to help each other grow and help each other in our profession. And especially us young coaches, I know you're a young coach too. I really try to look out for younger coaches, and I just hope it's something that it's not a mistake they made. Yeah. You said you had a guest on your last podcast, right? That's like, I handed out 500 business cards. And he was like, next year I handed out like 4, right? Like, I didn't want to, you know, do all that stuff. So yeah, I just, it's something that is, it has spoken to me a little bit.
Thank you so much for coming on today. And, you know, you're the first guest that I talked to about things like the Black Lives Matter movement. And I appreciate you being open and honest with that. And just for all sure. The nuggets that you gave us today, I appreciate it. So again, thank you so much.
I appreciate you. I think this is great. I'm a huge podcast guy. Like, I listen to podcasts when I work out. You know, I think this is anything that helps me kind of get better and learn. And I can't do anything in silence. I always need like background noise. I need something going on to hear. This podcast has been great. And I don't know your opening intro, like the music you play at the beginning and end. I need that. I need a sample of that. I love that song, whatever that is.